the name of the values that keep you alive, do not let your vision of man be distorted by the ugly, the cowardly, the mindless, and those who have never achieved his title. Do not lose your knowledge that man's proper estate is an upright posture, an intransigent mind, and a step that travels unlimited roads. Do not let your fire go out, sparked by replacing the spark in the hope the swamps of the approximate are not quite, the not yet, the not at all. The world you desired can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It's yours.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. Today, I'm here with Hayden, and I'm very excited to talk to you a little bit about Alex Exchange and the Stax ecosystem. So thanks so much for coming on, Hayden.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
So how did you come to be involved in Alex Exchange, and how were you introduced to Stax more specifically?
Sure. So my background is that I did my undergrad in physics. Then out of school, I worked in investment banking for Goldman. I was there for approximately a decade. And then, you know, about 2 or 3 years after leaving, Chanda Xu, the co-founder and CEO of Alex, reached out to me that she was looking to build DeFi on Bitcoin. And, you know, at the time, I was already, you know, quite interested in crypto and just learning more about DeFi. And, you know, as soon as she said DeFi on Bitcoin, it really intrigued me, and I had to know more. And it sounded like a really unique opportunity that I couldn't pass up. And so, yeah, that's when I joined the team. It was in September of 2021, about just like 3 months after the project began.
Gotcha. And so what has been your experience building DeFi on Bitcoin? What is, you know, what is the layer two essentially Stax? How has the experience been working with that? Are there, you know, advantages you've seen, limitations? What can you tell people about it who maybe don't know anything about it?
Sure. And so I guess, you know, sort of beginning with Stax, in a nutshell, I like to say that Stax, you can think of it as Ethereum on Bitcoin. And by that, I mean that Stax is a Bitcoin layer for enabling smart contracts that are anchored to Bitcoin. So I want to clarify that Bitcoin, it does have basic smart contracts, which are the ability to send and receive Bitcoin. But those aren't what we think of as the fully expressive contracts that you find on Ethereum that allow you to build dApps and DeFi. And so with Bitcoin, you have miners expending energy to write a Bitcoin block. And that's why, you know, Michael Saylor in some talks has talked about how you can almost think of Bitcoin as a digital store of energy, or as a unit of energy. With Stax, miners have to spend Bitcoin to write a Stax block. And so every Stax block is born from a Bitcoin transaction, which records the state of the chain. And this is through a unique consensus mechanism called proof of transfer, or POX, where Stax miners spend Bitcoin for Stax block rewards and transaction fees. And this is the mechanism that through which Stax and Bitcoin share consensus. And so the major advantage of Stax is that this sharing of a consensus mechanism, where Stax is essentially recycling the energy of proof of work to generate the Stax chain, means that Stax transactions inherit the security of the Bitcoin network. So if you want to alter the history of Stax, you'd have to alter its record on Bitcoin itself. And that comes with the physical constraints of altering Bitcoin, which is, you know, part of what makes it the most secure network in human history. Another major advantage of Stax is that through this proof of transfer mechanism, supporters of the Stax network, which are called stackers, receive a yield in native Bitcoin. So Stax being the only layer where you receive literally a native Bitcoin yield for so supporting cool. The network. In terms of disadvantages, probably the the number one that comes up in feedback is at the moment the network speed. Stacks like Bitcoin is optimized for decentralization and security. So what the you know what the Stacks technical team is building now is greater scalability. So at the moment, Stacks operates on Bitcoin time. So when you do a transaction on Alex, it'll take 10 to 30 minutes for confirmation. As a caveat to that, however, Stacks is building towards reducing that time to 5 to 15 seconds, which with the Nakamoto release, which is scheduled for Q4 of this year, which will definitely be a huge step forward for Bitcoin layers.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I think if you guys do that, then Ethereum L2s are dead in the water overnight pretty much. So I'm really hoping that it can get to that point. And I will say I've been playing around a lot with it. I've been minting some like little meme coins and just playing around and seeing how it goes. And it's very clean, feels a lot like the ETH L2s, which is
At the
exactly what I
beginning, right?
want.
Yeah, I
Exactly.
think so.
Yeah, exactly. Except I like the people that are doing it a little more. It's all just the coolest people who are first in on Bitcoin, which is the best. So I know there's also ordinals. There's BRC20. Did that exist when you started building? Was that ever a consideration to do anything there, or is that something you guys are just kind of keeping an eye on? And how would you compare it to Stacks, I guess?
Sure. And so, and so Ordinals definitely came as a surprise. With Alex and the decision to build on Bitcoin. So when the project was first conceived of in May of 2021, that was the beginning of the summer of DeFi 2.0. Yeah, so the summer of 2020 was the original summer of DeFi. And then in 2021, the bull market was still raging. And there was a lot of buzz on DeFi, on Ethereum, Avalanche, Solana, etc. And our team did seriously study building on each of these different L1s. The reason we chose Bitcoin, I like to think of as expressed well in a Robert Frost poem, that two roads diverged in the woods, and we took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. So between the members of the Alex team, there's collectively almost a century of TradFi experience. And so we have a deep intuition that the basis of all finance and one is one thing, and that is trust. And trust isn't something that has a launch date. Trust doesn't come from a white paper. Trust has to be earned and battle tested over time. Bitcoin has a track record going back to 2008. It hasn't been exploited. The network has, truly very minimal downtime. Transactions haven't been reversed. It has survived multiple 80% drawdowns. And its core protocol is still, with just a few tweaks, very much similar to the one that launched on day one. And proof of work is really at the core of that success because proof of work is trusting in the laws of physics. With proof of work, you have energy, which anchors Bitcoin to the physical realm. And that is why, we as a team believe that DeFi needed Bitcoin to take that next major step into mass adoption because there is a trust and security that is paramount to finance and which is unique to Bitcoin in a way that can't be replicated or recreated on other chains. When it comes to ordinals, that was an incredibly pleasant surprise because for years members of the Stacks community, such as Munib, one of the co-founders of Stacks, had spoken theoretically about how Bitcoin had been underused as a data layer or a settlement layer. And so up until Ordinals, it was purely theoretical. Bitcoin was the ultimate money layer, but it really wasn't valued in terms of the security of its data. With Ordinals, for the first time, a Satoshi, which is 1/100 millionth of a Bitcoin, is worth more than its pure monetary value. There is a premium that people pay when they inscribe an ordinal or buy an ordinal, an ordinal, sorry, for the block space of Bitcoin itself. And so, with that in mind, it's that ordinals are, purely on the Bitcoin L1. And they're made possible as a result of the Taproot upgrade. Ordinals as they are at the moment, however, do, like the Bitcoin L1, lack fully expressive smart contracts. So, you know, so at the moment, you can't, say, borrow collateral against an ordinal. You can't directly fractionalize them. You can send and receive them. And so on these on the exchanges such as Gamma or Magic Eden, you have PSBTs, or partially signed Bitcoin transactions. So if I have an ordinal, I can list it on the exchange for, say, 0.1 Bitcoin. And when I do so, I'm signing my half of a Bitcoin transaction. When another counterparty agrees that they want to buy the ordinal for that listed price, they are signing the other half of the transaction. And then both parties are doing a send and receive from both sides. I think, you know, again, ordinals are still very, very early. The ordinals protocol, I think it was January 23rd that it launched. And its popularity has really taken off. And as these different teams and projects are building, I think part of the goal is that we do want to create greater utility for ordinals as financial instruments, as is the case on Ethereum. And in order to do that, you know, smart contract solutions will be needed. Stax is a layer that can enable that, and it can do so much more intimately because it is very much anchored on Bitcoin relative to other blockchains. And so that is something that we are keeping an eye on, and we are monitoring and hope to enable and facilitate in the future.
Wow, that was beautifully put, and that was an incredible breakdown. So thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you.
I think that's a great way of putting it for people who are super new to Bitcoin DeFi. I think a lot of people who listen, it's probably the first time they're hearing about it. So I'm excited to get their foot in the door here.
Right.
When you look at, you know, an exchange like Uniswap or even the native exchange of Stax like StaxSwap, how do you compare Alex to those two? Did you, you know, were you really looking at like Uniswap as sort of the gold standard when you were building this, or how did you think about, you know, what you wanted to implement, how you wanted to differentiate, and how would you compare yourself to both of those?
Sure. And so at the moment, Alex is in a sense the Uniswap of Bitcoin DeFi, where in terms of a TVL, monthly users, unique wallet addresses, and market cap, we are, you know, far and away the dominant Bitcoin DeFi protocol. Our AMM pools do have the deepest liquidity, which is, you know, crucial for smooth AMM experiences. And our team is unique in leveraging the knowledge and experience we have in trading, risk management, and product design from traditional finance to DeFi. That's primarily our goal is that as Bitcoin Capital wakes up to the possibilities and offerings that there are in Bitcoin DeFi, that we grow and become proportionally to Bitcoin DeFi what Uniswap is to Ethereum in terms of size and market cap and TVL. And so, you know, there are a handful of other DeFi projects on Stax in the moment, with, you know, Stax Swaps being among them, as well as Arcadico. But in terms of providing that sort of Uniswap liquidity, which is the dominant liquidity pools, that's the position that we currently occupy.
Yeah, and I will say it's beautifully made. The UI is incredible.
Oh, thank you.
I just love being on the website. And I've had to use StaxSwap a little bit. I launched a few meme coins. I put out something called Corgi Coin, and I put a Pepe
on
nice. Stax.
Yeah.
And just been playing around with like the liquidity pools and just like getting a feel for it. But I've been just desperate to play around in Alex because the UI is so much better. Like, just StaxSwap is just never updating things. Like, everything is like never refreshed, and it just feels very static. And I think what you guys have done is really going to bring a lot of people in who just, you know, need a little more handholding and aren't, you know, really in the industry already, I guess.
Sure. And I guess what I would also, I guess, highlight in the difference, say, between, you know, why do DeFi on Bitcoin as opposed to doing it on Ethereum, for example. Which again, I think traces back a bit to where we can use like ordinals as an example, where let's say as a for the sake of conversation, that you have a single photo of your grandparents who raised you, and this photo really means the world to you. It's literally priceless. And you have, to select a choice of media of how you want to store this photo. When you look at what the options are, when it comes to physical storage, whether it be the sort of photo itself or through a hard drive or flash drive, we know that physical items can be lost, stolen, damaged, they can glitch, they can be affected by time, exposure to the elements. When you look at digital options for storage, if you look at centralized networks, whether it's Google, Apple Cloud, Amazon Web Services, you are putting that data entirely in the control of these mega corporations, and they can seize your account, you can get locked out, they can lose your data, and their terms of service will absolve them from the liability for that. So then you turn and you look to blockchain solutions. And you think, I have the data of this photo. What if I store it as your typical NFT on, say, like Ethereum or Solana? And by doing though, the image is typically stored off-chain, unless it's an off-chain NFT, which is typically rare to do, unless it's a sizable collection. And even then, it's done on these IPSF or distributed storage systems. With ordinals, you are inscribing that data directly onto the Bitcoin blockchain itself. The NFT isn't a pointer to a file that can be altered or changed as at a later date. As I believe, on Ethereum, there was a collection called Goblin or something similar that became unhappy with how royalties were being altered. So they changed all the NFT photos to basically a bunch of middle fingers. with
That's Ethereum in a nutshell right there.
ordinals. So with ordinals, there's absolutely like no risk of that occurring. Once it's inscribed onto Bitcoin, that data is being held on thousands of nodes across the world. It's basically the most indestructible media that currently exists for storage, of not just NFT images, but I love looking at the ordinal inscriptions and how there are people inscribing poems. There are people inscribing a short clips of music, such as the opening of Mahler's Thus Spake Zarathustra. There are people uploading works of classical art, people who are uploading the piano scores to their favorite pieces of music. And they're doing that because you're creating this digital artifact that very likely into hundreds, if not thousands or tens of thousands of years to the future, will remain intact in a way that almost no other institution really can provide. And so if you think about it that way, right? And that so if you have that photo, I think it's hard to argue that there is a safer place for you to store that data than onto an ordinal. So now imagine when it comes to DeFi, because we often now we look to DeFi on Ethereum with its market cap of say like 100 billion, and we look at it sort of like in awe of like, man, one day it would be amazing if Bitcoin DeFi reaches that market cap. But in truth, and at least at Alex, in taking the long view, we don't see ourselves in competition with Liquidia with Ethereum liquidity, but with traditional finance itself, where you have over $300 trillion in real world assets that will progressively become tokenized because it is the superior technology for the settlement of wealth, for the storage of data. And when you now have, you know, trillions of dollars of wealth, or when you're using a DeFi and the trades that you're doing are a large share of your network, of your net worth, or that is money that you've worked perhaps decades in order to accumulate and store. Security, above all, is what you want. You want to know that transaction is secure, it's safe, it cannot be reversed. The community can't, at a later date, decide to change the consensus mechanism through which it's going to be validated. That it's really, you know, immutable, that you are also making a digital artifact out of that transaction. And so I think that applies both on the personal level as well as to these major financial institutions and wealth managers who control, you know, pension funds in the trillions, that when they want to transact with these tokenized real-world assets, and they want to do so in a trustless way, in a very efficient way, without middlemen and with the maximum of security, the natural choice for them will be to go to Bitcoin DeFi. And that's where a project like Alex finds its ultimate use case. So what we're building now is really the infrastructure that'll come to fruition in 5 to 10 years' time, as we see this major paradigm shift and how the world financial system interacts and stores wealth and transacts wealth.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you just made me think it'd be awesome to just have the Library of Alexandria on Bitcoin someday. It might be our, you know,
Exactly,
immutable
right?
record of all the things that we don't want to get lost to history. And I think that you make a great point. Building out the infrastructure is the important part. That's, you know, how you pin all this down, and then you'll find the creators and the people who will bring all the excitement to it once, you know, once that's all set. So
Right, absolutely.
in that vein, you know, how have you guys been trying to attract good projects? How do you select tokens that are available? What tokens are available? Are there any, you know, projects you'd like to highlight? And how do you think you can get people excited to join Stacks as opposed to Ethereum? Is there going to be a Pepe equivalent, or is it an NFT? You know, what is the thing that gets people excited to join?
Sure. And so currently, Alex lists 13 tokens. Our most recent one was SUSDT, which is wrapped Ethereum USDT. And those 13 tokens allow up to 78 different token pairs to be traded. So, among them are your sort of headline ecosystem tokens. So there's, Stacks, there's Alex. Auto Alex, which I'll talk a bit more about later, which is our auto compounding token. There's XBTC, which is wrapped Bitcoin. There's XUSD, which is wrapped USDC, SUSDT, which I mentioned, as well as, several project or ecosystem tokens. And so initially, the tokens were selected by the Alex Lab Foundation. But, as over time, our goal has always been progressive decentralization of governance. And so many of the tokens that have been added recently, whether it's been, for example, like Welsh Corgi Coin, that was entirely done by the community, where, the community can reach out for the foundation, and as long and basically a liquidity pool is created, and that token can be added to the Alex AMM DEX. As far as then, like how do we get how do we attract Ethereum users, or why are people coming to Stacks in the first place? I think when we look at the data, the number one driver of people coming to Stacks is typically the stacking yield in native Bitcoin, where you can where you can basically stake your Stacks capital and receive that native Bitcoin yield. And I believe the last cycle was something like 8.8%, something along those lines. And that is in native Bitcoin, which of course, if you like Bitcoin, who doesn't want to earn some more on their capital? The data as well shows that there's a lot of activity with people coming for Bitcoin naming services, or BNS, which is where you can buy .BTC domains. And so you know, that's a lot of fun for the community to do. It's a very active Discord. You know, people, you know, like, you know, just as it was with the sort of dot-com boom, staking their claim to either, you know, a short three-letter or three-character domain names, or picking names that they think will be popular in the future. And for only two stacks, which at the moment is less than $2, you can lock up that domain for 5 years. And so, you know, compared to like a .com domain, it's vastly more economical to do so. And then, you know, so there's the buying, purchasing, trading BNS domains. The next on the list would be Stacks NFTs, which, for example, like on the Gamma marketplace, people, you know, can go to participate in Megapont Apes, for example, which would probably be the sort of blue chip Stacks NFT project. And other NFTs that are being launched as well. You know, Gamma also having an Ordinals marketplace. After that is Bitcoin DeFi. So tokens like Alex, like Arcadico, like StackSwap, which people can buy into, and participate in that way. And I think, you know, at the moment, as crypto winter continues thawing out into spring, there will be, you know, a revival of builders on Bitcoin layers. You know, I think Ordinals have been a huge driver in people realizing the value that there is in Bitcoin layers, of Bitcoin as a settlement layer, as a data storage layer. And so as these new projects are built, you know, Alex does have a launch pad for initial DEX offerings where we can connect those emerging projects with our community, which, you know, remains the project with the largest community on Stacks, as well as, you know, the community listing that token on the DEX. And so an AMM is created, so that at all times, you know, people can have a price quoted where they can, you know, trade or enter into or exit out of that token through Alex.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think it'd be really cool if you had a voting mechanism in place for governance where the community members can decide, you know, which tokens get listed and stuff like that. And I think you guys are on the right path there. And also on the .btc, I think those are really exciting. It's really cool that you can just kind of set that as your wallet address. It's really easy to find people, send Bitcoin, send Stacks tokens. Right. I have not been able to purchase one. I will say that's one thing I wish you guys would launch, honestly, because I feel like when you guys launch stuff, it works. But I've not been able to get one of those damn names. I've been trying forever. But I think if anyone has a chance to try some of that stuff out, it's really fun. So can you tell us a little bit about the bridge that you guys have built? I know that's pretty unique, and I think that's super important. I think one of the biggest difficulties that Stacks has right now is just on-ramping in any capacity. So Right. You need, I mean, for a while I was using LN Swap and it was working great, actually. And then I sent some and it was not working great. Still have never got my money, and it's down. I think it's been down for weeks, months. A lot of places are pulling Stacks token off of like US exchanges. So I think like mostly just Right. Coinbase and a few others. So I guess what is the importance in bridging these ecosystems to get new people in the door?
Of course. And so, you know, blockchains are notoriously interoperable. And so, you know, it's hard for blockchains to communicate with each other. And as interest in Bitcoin layers surged, a major point of friction that we heard from our community and newcomers was, as you mentioned, that it was a bit of a hassle to onboard and offboard the Alex ecosystem or Stacks. So because at the moment, without a bridge to bring liquidity into or out of Alex, it requires going through a multi-step process where you have to go through a centralized exchange, which, you know, is not necessarily something that, you know, most users might want to do. Even when the transaction is sent, there's often a wait time of several blocks for the transaction to be confirmed. And so what we were looking to do with the bridge is to create a much smoother and direct one-step process that can link the liquidity between the Alex and Stax ecosystem and other blockchains. And so it's been less than a month that we've launched the Alex Bridge, and the first token that we've launched is linking USDT or Tether on Ethereum to SUSDT on Stax. And we do plan on adding additional tokens in the future. We're looking at in early May linking to BNB for example, with other chains and ecosystems to come. And really the importance of that is that bridges are the inception of being able to bring Bitcoin value to the multi-chain. So as news of, say, whether it's ordinals spreads and interest in Bitcoin layers picks up, how can users on these different blockchains come and participate in these different Bitcoin layers? How can we make that process as smooth and seamless as possible, so that they can also, have the security assurance of Bitcoin settlement, so that they can buy, a Bitcoin NFTs or participate in Bitcoin DeFi, or look at what the emerging projects on Stax are, and become involved. And so, the more bridges and tokens that we create and linking these different ecosystems, it's comparable to, say, starting a sort of an island nation. And at first, there's only a very basic airstrip, or maybe there's just a dock. And so, to sort of leave or get to the island is a bit of a hassle. As you develop the infrastructure on the island, as you have more residents, as you have, a system of roads and sewers and electricity and everything else that you associate with the developed society, then you also, have to increase that one lane airstrip has to become an airport that can handle, a 747 jet. What was just a pier, you want to make, a full dock. You want to create as many avenues for people to come to the island and leave the island in order to make it a viable destination. And so really, bridges in a sense serve that same function as infrastructure that facilitate people coming and going, and that then triggers the networking effects, where the more people who are come and go, the more positive their experience, the more likely word of mouth is to spread, and others are to come. If they have a positive experience, then you begin to see that snowball starting to grow and pick up. And so it's vital that we do make a beginning with bridges, and we do hope to see other projects do bridges as well. The Stax Foundation establishing bridges, because all the better, the more avenues that there are for people to enter and exit the ecosystem.
Well, I love the metaphor. I guess continuing the metaphor, my question is, why isn't, say you're traveling to the island, why aren't there more options to see how much the flights cost? Like, why is DeFi, low on data? Things like order books, just like feeding people the things they need to do. I know Alex is working on an order book, which is really exciting to me. I love looking at charts. I stare at Coinbase Pro all day and just try to read yeah, into it. Exactly. So, why don't most DEXs do that? Are there challenges, and why did you guys decide to do that?
Sure. And so DEXs, at least up until now, have typically been of the, usually they choose to go in the AMM or order book variety. And so just to kind of quickly review, an AMM stands for an automated market maker. And the way that you can think of it is as a robot that will quote you a price for a token at any time. With an order book, it's a system where participants, they list the size and price of where they want to enter and exit a trade. And then a market maker or broker, you know, connects the buyers and sellers. And so anyone listening who has likely traded in the past, whether it's stocks or foreign exchange, or using a centralized exchange, has probably used what is an order book. You know, that's typically the layout that you're familiar with, where you'll have a tab that shows the market depth, which is what are the orders that are listed on the buy side and which are listed on the sell side. On the other hand, AMMs are a unique crypto innovation that were pioneered by Uniswap. And so, but before crypto, automated market making wasn't something that really existed. And so I think in crypto in particular, you tend to see AMM DEXs more often because they're ideal for lower liquidity community tokens. When you have tokens that are low in liquidity, the order book system, it doesn't really work well, because typically you'll have buyers and sellers who are far apart in price. And so you really have no idea how long you're going to have to wait for your order to be filled. You can maybe post a buy or sell order, and it could be weeks or months or maybe never until your order is filled. And until then, you're sort of stuck you're stuck holding with no way to sort of get out of it. What's nice with an automated market maker is that there's always a quote. You know, there's always, you know, automatic liquidity that is made available through the algorithm. And so that's, you know, primarily where AMMs kind of shine, is with these lower liquidity tokens. And and crypto, of course, you know, a lot of the sort of excitement with DEXs are these more speculative lower liquidity community tokens that people want to be, you know, early buyers or aim for big price moves. And the fact that it's literally automated, so you don't need a market maker in the middle. You don't need a large degree of liquidity in order to make this system work. And so that's typically what a lot of these exchanges, these decentralized exchanges, will default to, is the AMM model. When there is greater token liquidity, and even as we look at the Alex order book, the order book will be primarily for the big liquidity tokens. You know, your Stacks, Bitcoin, Alex, and other tokens with really a significant amount of market depth. And the reason for that is because with an order book, you do have the advantage that you can trade without having to be glued to the screen 24/7. So you can enter a buy or sell order at a given price, and then you can sort of go about your day and know that if the market moves and hits that price, your order is going to have to be filled. And so there is definitely something to be said for that, as opposed to, you know, when it's an AMM, and say, you know, Bitcoin is at 27K, and when it hits 30, that's your take profit level, let's say, where you want to share some, you want to sell some of your position. If it's purely an AMM, if you aren't watching the DEX throughout the day, there could be a 30-minute window. We know how volatile crypto is, where the price, you know, briefly spikes up to 31K and then drops back down. But since you weren't watching, you sort of missed that opportunity. Whereas with an order book, if you had set that buy order, it would have been filled when that move up occurred. And so I think AMMs and order books, they sort of they serve different functions, and they provide different trade-offs in terms of user experiences. I think that's the reason, you know, why most DEXs tend to go to AMMs, is because they are automated, and because it does facilitate these lower liquidity communities. Whereas, you know, when it comes to an order book style DEX, you know, most people who are likely trading order book style are mostly at the moment likely trading on centralized exchanges. However, the downside, of course, with a centralized exchange, as we saw with FTX, is that you're taking custodial risk. You know, you are surrendering custody of your crypto to the exchange. And so having a decentralized order book where you can place that order and not take that same custodial risk is definitely something that we want to add to the user experience of using Alex. You know, we really want to provide our users the option of both. The AMM DEX will still be there, but if you want to trade these highly liquid tokens in a more hands-off way, or perhaps in a more controlled way, because then you can enter a trade, you can put a stop loss level, you can put an exit level, and now you're sort of trading within a particular range. Whereas within AMM, when you enter a trade, you know, if the market, you know, collapses in the next day or the next week, you can't really have a stop limit order to get you out. And so, you know, I think it's all about options and providing a full, you know, a full spectrum of user experiences so people can choose what is the best fit for them and their goals and how they want to trade and how they want to participate in crypto and how they want to trade.
Yeah, I think optionality is everything. And I think for me, at least, I would just love to see a pretty chart with the tokens that I've launched. I'd love to see what's the daily change. You know, what's the I tried making a USDA pair because I was like, but maybe I'll get the dollar price that way in a little simpler format. And then the USDA went to 73 cents. And I'm like, well, no, that's not helpful. And so I think a lot of it is just people don't even know what data to look at. They're like, how much did this token even go up? What is the exchange rate of stack swap to, you know, Corgi to whatever? And I think just having it in a format that they're used to seeing, that people might be familiar with if they just dabbled a little bit with trading, I think that stuff helps a lot. And just having that data there, I think that's one thing I was very frustrated with Stack Swap is they'll just show like the top 15 coins, but everything else it's just kind of like good luck, figure it out. So I think it's nice to have that data and just give people the tools they need to make those decisions.
And I think with an order book, you also have the plus in that when you visually look at the order book, it gives you a little bit of you know of what they call like market color. You know, like
100%.
you can see what the open interest is in terms of people who want to buy, what the open interest is in terms of people who want to sell. And so you can know, you know, like how deep buy interest or sell interest goes in either way. And that and you can use that to possibly inform your order decision. You know, of course, at the same time, we have to keep in mind that, you know, some market players might post, say, like a very large sell order and then withdraw it before it's executed. And they might do that intentionally in order to
Build
swing
a wall.
sentiment in a particular direction. And so I think even then you do have to take the data that's available there with a grain of salt and the sort of understanding that with that open information, and then this is, you know, sort of always been the case with capital markets in the sense there is a bit of a sort of like poker mentality where, you know, you aren't just necessarily trading the fundamentals of the asset, but you're also trading on market psychology is a significant part of it as well.
Absolutely. Yep. It's all a big sociology experiment, which is kind of my favorite part. Could you tell us a little bit about the wallets that are compatible with Stacks, how you guys might be working with them? I know there's some rumblings about in-app swaps, which would be awesome, which are not currently enabled through either of the wallets. So it'd be great just to hear a little bit about your plans there.
So definitely. So the two principal wallets for Stacks would be Hero Wallet and as well as Xverse. You know, with Xverse having, you know, it originally being built as a mobile wallet, which was a big advantage also. Now they also have a desktop app, So, you know, they really provide both features. And so with at the moment, we are collaborating directly with Xverse to allow in-app swaps that utilize the Alex DEX on the on the back end. And so, you know, again, just as we were describing with bridges, whenever possible, we want to simplify and remove all points of friction when it comes to the user experience of Bitcoin DeFi. You know, a new user might be onboarded onto Xverse, because, you know, Xverse allows allows you to like hold ordinals, send and receive ordinals. And then when they get onto Xverse, they might take an interest in Bitcoin, on Bitcoin layers and ecosystems. And so they might not necessarily have heard of Alex yet, but the fact that directly on the Xverse wallet, they can see that they can swap into this wide variety of different tokens, you know, is already a huge improvement in terms of introducing someone to the Stacks ecosystem, where they can see that there's STX, there's XBTC, there are stable coins that they can swap into and out of. And if they want to do so, you know, directly on the app, because that's what they're most familiar with, that's what's more convenient for them. You know, they don't want to have to take the extra step or two of going into the Alex app through Xverse. Then really, we have absolutely no concern or opposition to that. You know, as long as they're able to access swapping and they're able to engage and participate, we see that as as a net positive. And so yeah, and so really that's something that we want to facilitate, is provide Alex's services to other projects. And you know, inclusive is that, for example, like Gamma on their back end, they do have the Alex swap API as well. So that, you know, for let's say like an auction for a Stacks NFT on Gamma, you can choose to pay with a wide variety of Stacks tokens. And when you do that payment, then you're going to be doing a swap through Alex into Stacks. And so, you know, again, you're just saving people that one step or two steps that make it all that much easier for them to engage, participate, trade. And that user experience and ease of use is one of the factors that's really critical to sort of adoption, you
Yeah,
know.
that's everything. It's, you know, sometimes it's 5 to 10 steps. So if you just take it one step at a time and whittle it down, eventually you get it to one step.
Yeah, because I guess, you know, like the classic example was that, and again, not a fan, wouldn't recommend anyone use it, but would be the popularity of say of Robinhood, where it really wasn't anything new for people to be able to use an online brokerage, but their sort of user experience made it literally as simple as say using Instagram, in a sense. You know, it was just really intuitive, and it probably came about at the right place at the right time, particularly as you know the sort of COVID lockdown came about. That, you know, it really took off due to how simple and direct it was. And in the same way, to whatever degree that we can streamline and smooth out the user experience, then you're more likely to engage and retain users that come to your ecosystem.
Yeah, I think that is everything. I think crypto has done a pretty terrible job at, you know, attracting sort of the least common denominator of people who are not familiar with tech. They're not developers. They don't really understand this, especially when you combine money and it's real money that people have worked hard for. You know, I have friends who tried to bridge on Polygon and, you know, just $1,000 never showed up because they didn't tick one wrong box. And, you know, those guys are never going to touch crypto again, or at least it'll be a long time because just one bad experience can really leave that taste in your mouth.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, you know, it's really, in the sense, so I agree. You know, I think and I think that's really an indicator of how early we are to the space, right? And that, you know, even if you look at the history of like home PCs, you know, when you used to just have a sort of DOS interface where you had to enter, you know, like command lines to run programs. And then, through like Mac OS and then Windows, it was just this huge revolution where now you have a mouse and you have a desktop and you have icons and folders, and it's so much more intuitive to use. Like equally with the development of the internet, or as Google has evolved to having like autocomplete fields, really simplifying and making user experiences in intuitive in the simplest possible are really key. And so no, so I absolutely agree that we have to. If we hope to see crypto mass adoption, so much is going to come down to execution, and that execution will be, how intuitive, how user-centric it is. That's something that we do put a lot of energy into at Alex. I do appreciate the comment earlier of how sort of like smooth the interface is, of how we polish the UI UX. Because we do know that that's vital, and it's something that we're always looking to upgrade, that we're looking to improve, and looking to sort of build upon. And so, as these elements of infrastructure get put into place, is where we will, gradually see this sort of change in perceptions and change in mass behavior. And so, because I yeah, ultimately the sort of market fundamentals are there, that persistent inflation isn't something that's sort of going away, that saving money has been made extremely difficult and complicated because the fiat system has really shaken people's trust in what money should be. If you think about it, when England, for example, was on the gold standard, there was really a minimal degree of inflation for well over a century, and that was a point of pride. And so, it used to be if you were, say, a blue collar worker, and you were being paid in gold, if you wanted to save money, you can put aside 10% of your gold every year with confidence that you are carrying that value into the future. So that when you retire in 50 years, the buying power of what you set aside is still there. That just isn't a reality anymore. Money that you put under the mattress or that you put in the savings account is slowly evaporating. And in 50 years' time, it's almost completely decimated in terms of its buying power. And then, you create behind this entire, that this entire Rube Goldberg machine, where you need investment advisors and 401ks and indices and mutual funds, and there are all these barriers that make it so difficult for people to build and accumulate wealth. And we're just starting to increasingly feel that in the West, whereas in a lot of the developing world, this has long been a reality, where there's always been high inflation, and people have constantly looked to, as soon as possible, get out of local currency into either property or into either precious metals. And fortunately, through Bitcoin, we now have the sort of ultimate form of sound money, which is vastly more portable than gold, which its liquidity is greater, the ease of transmitting it across the globe is unparalleled. And if anything, it's even it's deflationary, whereas the gold supply increases about 2% a year. The Bitcoin supply will always be 21 million Bitcoins. And if anything, it's even mildly deflationary, because as wallet addresses are lost, and so again, everyone be careful about that. But as that does occur, that's basically Bitcoin that's taken out of circulation as well. And so, the fundamental drivers are there to move the global populace increasingly towards alternatives to fiat, which is ultimately crypto and blockchain technology, which is really revolutionary. It comes down to us as builders, as a community of users, to exactly what you're doing through this podcast, kind of spread the gospel or share the good news that there is an alternative. And with time, you know, it is getting progressively easier and more intuitive to use. And so, you know, so in that
Absolutely.
sense, you know, like a thank you as well for doing what you do, because it is
Nothing.
a vital part of the crypto ecosystem.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, a part of why I do what I do is my family's from Lebanon. They had to flee because inflation went through the roof. Like they understand this, you know. They're watching the US right now and they're like, this feels a lot like what we went through. And we, you know, they're the people who have gone through it very much understand this problem. And when they see Bitcoin, they understand the solution pretty quick. Unless you're like Nassim Taleb or one of these guys telling Lebanese not to buy Bitcoin, which I cannot fathom at this point. But there's still, you know, it is crazy that in these countries where year over year 100% inflation, a lot of people still are not willing to try something else, which is sometimes discouraging as well. But there are enough people now that are getting that courage, I think, and it's just about building those communities and getting people to support each other in that. And I think that's hopefully we have more El Salvadors coming in the future.
My family is from Brazil as well, which, you know, has also struggled with, you know, persistent high inflation. And you know, like I remember being a kid, even the literal currency, the name of it has changed, you know, in my lifetime that I can remember about two or three times. And you know, I remember the first time being in Brazil when instead of the real, it was something called the Cruzeiro, and it was like 1,000 for like a for a coffee. And just turning to my dad and thinking like what's going on here? Like why why are the prices so like unbelievably high? Because you don't necessarily have that point of reference. And
Yeah, exactly.
And I agree, and I think, you know, there's a sort of saying. I think it's Tony Robbins that change occurs when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change. And so,
Absolutely.
you know, I think still we are kind of still having the kind of screws tightened when it comes to the US and inflation at the moment. And you have, you know, you have a Fed that's been so desperate to bring inflation under control that the rate hikes were so steep and so rapid that that's what literally what broke Silicon Valley Bank. And you know they've even expressed the sentiment that they are willing to continue rate hiking and cause a recession. Cause, you know, thousands of people, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands to lose their jobs if that's what it takes to bring inflation under control. And so, I mean, like first of all, I think just on a fundamental level, that should make anyone uncomfortable to know that there is this entity of unelected official that has that amount of power and influence and that can decide what your money is worth. You know, because I think at the end of the day, a huge motivator with Bitcoin is self-determination. That you know, when you own Bitcoin, you are also a part of Bitcoin. You know, there's no CEO of Bitcoin, there's no Fed board of Bitcoin that's going to decide to, you know, double the money supply or anything similar. And so then the Fed is also between a rock and a hard place because if they in that fight to bring inflation under control, they do risk tanking stock and equity markets. And you know the stock market has become a political asset or entity because you now have a majority of Americans have their retirement wealth in these 401ks, which are tied to the stock market. And so if you hike rates to the extent that it causes equity markets to tank 30-40%, that can potentially cause like a mass revolt. And it's also seen as a political weapon. There's almost probably no sure way of ensuring that there's a switch in political parties around recession, around election season, than for there to be a major downswing in stocks. And so I think because that they are sort of trapped, what we're likely to see is increasingly a normalization of high inflation, or you know, just kind of moving the goalposts. And so, yeah, you know, like 5-6% inflation, that's okay. And then it, you know, that goalpost just continues shifting because you know, fiat and inflation, it is a spiraling addiction. You know, it's such an easy fix to all your problems that the more you employ it, the more you have to continue employing it. And you know, you sort of end up with fiat Ponzinomics in a sense, and the end result in the long term is, you know, a hyperinflationary spiral and the growth of people looking for alternatives to store their wealth and carry it into the future.
Yep, I couldn't agree more on all those points, and we're in for some exciting times coming on up.
Right.
So I guess it's exciting though in the sense that you now get the opportunity to build your own economy around Alex. So when you're thinking about this from this, you know, perspective of how do we build an economy where there's not too much supply, where there are the right incentives to, you know, lock up your tokens, where there are the right incentives to use them, and there's utility. So like how do you think about the total supply, the distribution, the supply curve? And I know you even have something called Auto Alex, so I'd love to get a bit of understanding about your thinking on all those different things.
Okay, sure. So I'll start out with Auto Alex, which is our auto compounding token. So when we initially launched Alex, which in mainnet was January 18th of 2022, there was only manual Alex staking. And so we, you know, understandably, we received the feedback from our community that having to harvest and manually harvest and restake their rewards every 3 to 4 days was a bit of a hassle. So, you know, couldn't we automate that process? So that's what we created Auto Alex to do, meaning that once you swap into or stake your Alex as Auto Alex, you just have to hold it in your wallet, and it automatically auto compounds over time and increases in value relative to Alex. And so, I mean, for example, when we launched Auto Alex during that very first cycle, one Alex was equal to one Auto Alex. It was a 1-to-1 ratio. If you had swapped your Alex into Auto Alex, that one Auto Alex now can be swapped for 1.5, 1.55 Alex on our DEX, because over time that Auto Alex has been auto compounding the staking rewards in that token. If you continue holding Auto Alex, then at some point in the future, you'll be able to swap it for 1.6 Alex and so on. And so ultimately, Alex and Auto Alex both are Alex. They are just the same token in two different forms, almost like water and ice, where Auto Alex is simply Alex that has been which has been permanently staked and is, you know, perpetually auto compounding. When it comes to the utility of Alex and how we determined and designed our tokenomics, this was done along with the advisors to Alex prior to our launch. You know, so these were experienced crypto insiders who had studied other projects and how those tokenomics had been created. You know, how you typically do the divisions between community, foundation, and founding team, and as well as how you imbue utility to an ecosystem token, which is something that we will actually be collaborating with our community with in order to determine. And so Alex, most importantly, it is the ecosystem and governance token of Alex. And so, you know, when you stake Alex or when you're a liquidity provider on Alex, those rewards are received in the form of Alex token. And so, and even, you know, within the next day, we're going to open a voting for Otto Alex and Alex Holders on how we are going to adjust Alex emissions. Because, you know, since with the bridge, we have recently added SUSDT. Those are new liquidity pools, such as Stacks, SUSDT, as well as the stable swap between XUSD and SUSDT, that we want to incentivize liquidity providers to come and participate in. And so that adjustment of how we will adjust the emissions of ALEX will be voted on by the community. Our perspective has been from launch that we've wanted to achieve a progressive decentralization, where we go when a project initially launches, you basically, you have the sort of founding team that created it, and in the long term, what you would ideally want to have is a full-fledged DAO. And as an intermediate step in between is where the Alex Lab Foundation comes into play as this transitional or intermediate entity, in order to allow the community to sort of write the rules together of how that DAO should operate. You know, because it's a very stark transition to suddenly go to complete community control, all in one go, because the community might not yet have matured in terms of how governance is undergone. What are the rules? Like how long should a proposal be open for vote? How long should the voting window be? What should the utilities of Alex token be created? All these decisions, we allow Alex holders to both create proposals, and then vote on them as a community. And so that is really the principal utility of Alex, and that is through holding Alex, you do have a choice, and you do have a vote on creating those proposals, voting on them. And among the things that you can vote on is how the protocol revenues should be distributed and allocated, and spent. And so I would say, really those are the sort of key factors, and it'll continuously be a work in process that we collaborate with our community with to evolve and mutually work together in making that transition towards having Alex be a full-fledged community DAO that can operate free of there having to be any sort of team that acts as an intermediary.
So, if anyone listening would like to join the community, become more of a part of the project, what are the best ways to get involved, in your opinion?
Sure. And so I would say that to get started on Alex, you'll need a Stax wallet such as Xverse or Hero wallet. And then once you have that wallet, you'll need to fund it with a small amount of Stax. And then there are links on the Stax page of where Stax can be acquired, either through a centralized exchange or, now you can use the Alex Bridge as well. Once you have Stacks, you can come to our app at app.alexlab.co, and you can go to our DEX and you can swap into the different ecosystem tokens on Alex. I'd also say to follow us on Twitter at AlexLabBTC. That'll keep everyone up to date with our launches, with our news, and what new incentivized test nets we might have coming out, what's on the horizon, what is our roadmap. And probably the most direct way that you can engage directly with the Alex team and Alex community would be through our Discord server at discord.gg/AlexLab. where you can find the Alex team members and message us, DM us directly, and have any questions or doubts that you have answered. And so, yeah, but between those two, those are, would be a great way to get started and really get plugged in into Alex.
Awesome. Well, this has been one of my favorite podcasts, honestly. I think you did such an amazing job of breaking all this down for everyone. And yeah, I think everyone's really going to enjoy this. And for all you listening, if you download an Xverse or a Hero wallet, I'll send you some Stacks tokens to play with. And you can use those to also play around on Alex. And I encourage you just to dive in, try these things, use them. You'll quickly figure out, where the holes are. If you're an entrepreneur who wants to build on, Stacks, all you have to do is play around with it a little bit, and you'll find a lot of opportunity there in a much less crowded market than a lot of the Ethereum L2s and some of the other players. So I think this is probably one of the most exciting things that's happened to the crypto space in probably 4 or 5 years, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how this shakes out. So thank you so much again for coming on, and thank you all for listening. We'll be back again soon with another episode.